Hello and welcome to this episode of the Sharpie Report. Before we get the show started, I wanted to say two things. One, I'm an idiot. So last the show I recorded, I was just editing it, and I realized that throughout the whole show, I had my audio coming in through the webcam speaker and not through my microphone. So the audio is a little rough, so I apologize. Feel free to call me an idiot in the comments. I feel terrible about it, but I'm sorry. You can still hear it. It's not that bad, but it bothers the crap out of me. But the guest speaker is totally fine. You can hear him very clear. And speaking of the guest, that's the second thing I wanted to talk about. I don't necessarily agree with everything he has to say. He comes from more of an agnostic point of view of the world. He has a lot of great things to say about creativity, a lot of great things to say about using your gifts. He created a movie about child trafficking, so he's shining light on darkness in our world. He's actually doing something with his life. There's some things about spirituality he discusses that I'm not on board with, but it does not outweigh the positive things that he's doing. That's why I brought him on the show. So I just wanted to give you a fair warning for that. So I hope you enjoy the show. Like I said, again, I'm sorry for the audio.
Talking about this group of about 8,000, 8,500 people who basically run the world. They devalue currencies. They bankrupt companies. They start wars. They get the financing for terrorism. All of the crap of the world that you see on a global stage is tied to all of these people.
We're on YouTube, iTunes, Blog Talk, and you can find me at Twitter at Sam T. Johnson. Well, today we're going to dive back into the world of Hollywood and talk about a couple different important issues. And we are joined by a producer that lives over in Los Angeles, and he produces a movie called A Child's Voice, and his name is John Paul Rice. How are you doing today?
Hey, Sam. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm doing great.
Well, I'm glad that you could come on the show. I just got finished watching your movie, and we'll talk about that later, but it was very well done. Anyway, let's talk about your trip into Hollywood first and your life around that. So just some of your background. So how did you get into this film production world?
Yeah, well, I was in school at Georgia State University several years ago and got an opportunity in my second year to work on the film Remember the Titans with Denzel Washington as a Titan football player.
Wow.
It was a great opportunity. It was a very unique experience. I got cast in that role, got to work on it for 2 months, and I was hooked. 16 hours a day and having no life outside of film just was my life for that 2 months. I went back into school and found myself working on independent films, low-budget independent films all over Atlanta for the next year until the premiere of Titans the following year. And then I moved out to LA 3 months later to be an actor. And in that process, within 6 months, I found myself at Senator International, which later became Mandate Pictures. But under the mentorship of Joseph Drake, who was the president, this is a gentleman who did Juno, The Grudge, Harold and Kumar, went on to do The Hunger Games as the executive producer. I really got a great chance for 4 years to learn under him and understand what it means to be a producer. Then I met Edgar Michael Bravo, a writer-director from UCLA. We partnered together. I started going out with some of his scripts. This is even really before we even had a company. And in about the summer of 2007 to 2008, we decided we were going to create our own company, create our own movies, and we were going to get the financing outside and independent of Hollywood, simply because that machinery as it exists back then and definitely today is very difficult to navigate and traverse. So we just wanted to work with people that we liked and who liked what we were doing. And since then, we've gone on to make 6 independent feature films, all dealing with different social issues in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's interesting that I appreciate how you guys always are talking about important social issues, like you said, and trying to raise awareness. It's not really what you see in Hollywood. It's all about the flash and the bang and the having fun. So What set you on that path to actually just wanting to make a difference?
Well, it came about because of a misfortune with a project that I was working on, that I'd been working on for 3.5 years to try to get off the ground. All the financing fell apart within a weekend because the key star who was attached, I won't say their name, but they got fired by everybody on their team. And then, of course, they went to another agency and they had a new agenda that day one, new game. So it was actually out of misfortune in reality that pushed us over into this world of dealing with films that were a little bit more intimate, dealing with subject matters from dealing with homelessness, prostitution, child abuse, drug addiction, mental health, and now human trafficking. And really what it was, is it just how we felt about those stories when we read about them or heard about them and thought, not really like thinking Hollywood's not doing anything about this, but we want to do something about this. We want to tell this story. We want to personalize and make it very intimate, in part because this is unique and it's not often talked about or shown this way outside of a documentary or two, or maybe a subject matter that's contained within a story or a character, but really to focus and hone in on what it would be like if I were to have researched this world and recreated it through a narrative fictitious drama or a supernatural thriller or science fiction or a psychological thriller. So we used the world of the narrative, and we wanted to do it in a way that would pull the viewer in without them really even having to know anything about that issue going into it. And they would see the world through the character's eyes and the story and the journey that they were on. And they would learn about that issue, emotionally impacted at the end, with the hope that with this new information that they had, they would be able to do something about it or take action.
Yeah, it's definitely, it makes a movie so much more real and so much more interesting when you know it's based on real life. These things are actually happening in our world. And it takes a lot of guts to stand up and produce films and any form of media like that, trying to shine some light on the darkness, especially in places like Hollywood that is so centered around a lot of evil things. So have you seen any pushback? Have you been like, what's life been like since you started to really shine lights on dark areas?
Most of it is ignoring. They ignore most of us. I think I got a really good heavy dose of that after a couple of submissions to festivals whom I respect. And, you know, there's a lot of politics that are involved with it. It's not just a liberal Democrat, you know, politic. It has to do with an agenda that they want to get out. And I didn't think, like, if you had talked to me this way, like 5 years ago, I would have totally thought you're nuts. That's not true. But in reality, I've gotten written letters back from us, from feedback of people who were taking our films apart based on the amount of people of color that are in certain roles.
Oh, gosh.
Has nothing to do with the subject matter, has nothing to do with the story's merits. They actually focus more about the diversity and how that might be perceived as offensive. And I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous. But the truth be told is that we went, when we did this last film, A Child's Voice, which deals specifically with human trafficking and satanic ritual abuse, which is all based off of decades long of research and victims and survivors coming forward and giving their testimonials, all credible. We were ignored for the premiere. I think we sent out between 200 and 300 emails to invite people from Amazon and Hulu and Netflix and also other production companies and even some people who had spoken out on this very issue. Two and three times, some of them we called and followed up with, and it was crickets for the most part. So I think right now we're just being ignored. I think if this film starts to gain mass and whatnot, I think you'll hopefully I won't see any kind of physical attacks, but I certainly know that there will be some kind of pushback against our movie, that they'll try to discredit it.
Yeah, well, you said something really interesting there. You said 5 years ago, I would have thought this is all crazy. Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, in reality, I mean, if we get into this a little bit, I considered myself a liberal, a Democrat, without really even knowing what that means and how it's evolved today. I still hold true to a lot of the principles of what I believe in, but what I've come to realize is that the way I see the world is I go where there's truth, and I go where the facts matter. And if you're going to do movies, you want to show all points of view in the best way that you can, which is to let people who see it decide what they feel from what they're seeing, what you're showing to them. Of course, there is a point of view that we're bringing to this piece, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I have to isolate or take out certain groups of people that we're not representing. I mean, in fact, the diversity which this industry seeks is in fact a repressive one, because it limits the representation of marginalized people, which have nothing to do with the color of their skin, but it's socioeconomic. It has to do with available opportunities. It has to do with depressed fortunes and families, people that have lost, 14 million people in this country to date who have still not had their recovery that they've been waiting for since the financial crash. So when you start looking at all of these facts and these issues, you see it affects a wide scope of human beings. And rather than dealing in collectivism or identity politics, you deal in the human issue first. That's why 5 years ago, if you had told me all this, I'd be like, what are you talking about? And now I've had kind of, I guess since the election of Donald Trump, which in my view and many other people blew a hole through reality. For those of us who were willing to look through that hole on the other side, there's a whole other world out there that's been suppressed and kept from people. And so I think that these are, divisive tactics that keep us thinking in certain frames about patriots are racist, or people who support Kaepernick or, have a moral authority. And really it's a divide and conquer tactic, because at the end of the day, the issues are not being served. People who are speaking up and who are saying things are doing so in a way that makes them morally superior over others. And it's a very slippery slope, if you know history. It's a very slippery slope, but a very dangerous one when you're claiming moral, your group is claiming moral authority over another, and you're not listening to the despair that's being felt from them. So I think Hollywood in this regard is very limited, and I don't see it changing anytime soon, although I would say that there is a new generation of filmmakers that is going to come through. And once they get their chance, you're going to be seeing more diversity and more talent and more new voices emerging in this industry as we move forward.
Yeah, you said, talking about different groups and the dividing each other is so important. It's like, focusing on the human aspect. That's a very liberal way of thinking. If you want to get back to like classic liberalism, worrying about the people who don't have as much, who are born into a tough situation. That's the true roots of what a liberal would think of. It's nowhere near what the far left has tried to claim it is now. And so when you see people just say, oh, all liberals are just stupid and wrong and evil, it's like, nah, like you're being fooled into thinking that same thing. It's the same thing we saw with Trump. Trump is a Nazi according to everyone on the left, but all of a sudden Kaepernick comes out and does this ad for Nike, and I literally saw the same people saying, oh, Kaepernick's, comparing Kaepernick to the Nazis as well. It's like, now they're right. It's like, what's going on there, that it's just such a goal to divide people?
Yeah, it's a culture war mentality. It really doesn't serve anything other than to give you a dopamine hit and, feel like you have a badge of honor with a retweet or a hashtag. And in reality, the real suffering that's going on out there is real. I mean, I have friends on the left and the right. Really, we don't talk about things this way, but I have good friends of mine who have suffered police brutality. I've seen how the police treat even white people out here, if you want to talk about race. And in no means does that, devalue the suffering and the oppression of what other people have gone through personally or even collectively as a group. But in reality, when you're looking at all of this, kind of speaks to your point a little bit. We have an issue that's been going on for 2 years of a protest. And what that protest is over is police brutality. But the real question is, who has the power to change it? Who has the power to actually do something about it in the government? No one has done anything about this issue to address it other than to pay lip service to it while it continues to go on. And yet what we have is we have a group of people who are patriotic. They love their flag. In truth, they probably don't want to be bothered by some of this stuff, and that's their right in terms of how they feel. But at the end of the day, the other side is saying that you're a bunch of racists if you don't agree with us and don't back Nike, which is a multinational corporation that uses North Korean slave labor in China to get around labor law.
No, oh, it's just mind-blowing.
So it's cognitive dissonance. And in reality, it serves nothing other than to keep people separated into camps of for and against. And in reality, what actually is happening is that there's more people out there whose real needs are not being answered because we feel like we're you know, the righteous one or the right one about this issue because we side with a figurehead or a personality, on top of which we don't even know truthfully, other than what is presented on TV and what Kaepernick has said. I don't know who the guy is. I think he has a right to express his views. I may not agree with him. I may agree with him. It doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, there's a problem going on that's not being addressed. And everybody else is squared off into this tribalism and this camps. And we can never come together to actually look at who's responsible for the problem and point the finger at the people and hold accountable the elected officials who could do their job, who campaign on these things and being for this and social justice and racial justice. And once they get into power, they do absolutely nothing. So that's kind of like, I mean, that's an anecdote, but there's real grievances out there. Same thing with Me Too. You know, Me Too has been very highly politicized. It's definitely been co-opted by the left, and pretty much all women are to be believed. Irregardless of the facts. I mean, we could talk about Kavanaugh, I'm sure, all day. But at the end of the day, there are real grievances of women who have been sexually assaulted and abused in this country, even more so children. And that's another thing we can get into a little bit later about what this all actually is about and the core issues. But I just hope that we exhaust ourselves with the culture war stuff to the point where we can start getting together and realizing that being behind a keyboard, being a keyboard warrior or speaking lip service or retweeting a meme is meaningless in terms of changing the hearts and minds of people that we profess we actually care about.
Yeah. Yeah. You can make an argument that it makes it worse. You know, it raises up issues that aren't even really, some of them aren't even real issues. They're just to distract them from important issues like, you know, the child trafficking, like you made your movie on. So let's get back into the movie world a little bit. I appreciated that conversation. Absolutely. Yeah. How did you get onto this topic? Like what about it in your heart? What got you to decide, I want to make a whole movie about sex trafficking?
So after Trump's inauguration, obviously I started to try to find answers because I had only heard one side of the argument, which was the mainstream media. Okay, so Hitler, Nazi, you know, kind of thing, the end of the world is coming.
Yeah.
And what it led me down is a path where I went back over the last decades, 30, 40 years. I went back to presidential debates in 92 with Ross Perot. I looked at the history of World War II. I started going on YouTube and I would binge watch probably 4, 5, 6 hours a night for an entire summer. And lo and behold, it was probably an Alex Jones episode and combination of Liz Crokin, Tracy Beans, the Honey Bee at a certain point, Melissa Zakaria. And it was citizen journalists. It's actually the alternative media that brought this to my attention. And when I realized what was going on in the Podesta emails and looked at the cover up, because I hadn't really paid attention to most of that. I paid attention to the WikiLeaks, but I didn't pay that much attention to Podesta emails. I was kind of just hiding my face and like, I didn't want to, not against that, but just the election itself. It was just a pure and grotesque, you know, demonstration of debate, if you even call it that. But essentially what I learned is that the history of our country and what we've been told is a fabrication. from history books, you know, that selectively now omit certain key events that occurred for World War II and World War I. World War II, though, was probably the most defining moment of this country in terms of the oligarchy that had financed both sides. And when I learned about that and I started seeing where the trajectory was going and the deep state and looking at everything, we came across this issue with human trafficking. And I looked at Cynthia McKinney's grilling of Donald Rumsfeld back, you know, during the Bush years. I learned about DynCorp. Then I came across Ronald Bernard. Ronald Bernard, for those of your viewers who don't know, this is on YouTube. He did a five-part series of Dutch media television last summer talking about this group of about 8,500 people who basically run the world. He was a servant in that class. He was a businessman, an entrepreneur in his 20s, and he was invited to join them to make obscene amounts of money and have incredible power and wealth, all sorts of women. And but they told him that you're going to have to put your conscience in the freezer. And as long as he was willing to do it, he was. And he said, sure, let's go. Until eventually, as a couple of years went by, he was doing this. And what I mean by what he was doing, they devalue currencies. They bankrupt companies. They start wars. They get the financing for terrorism. All of the crap of the world that you see on a global stage is tied to all of these people, according to him. And not just according to him, but according to several people now that I've done more research on this. But when he talked about being brought into a Church of Satan, he thought it was kind of silly and funny. And, you know, there were people in robes and they're, you know, chanting and saying, oh, he's just not in these naked women. But it really came, it hit home for him when the moment came when he was offered to sacrifice and kill a child. And that was his breaking, that was the turning point. That was his breakdown moment. So when we heard that story, we looked at the Franklin scandal, which is in book format. We looked at the documentary of the found footage that they had put together. We looked at the BBC report with that young girl many years ago talking about the elites. We looked at Annette Lucas. We started seeing all of these SRA survivors talking about and communicating a very similar story. So I sent this over to Edgar, the writer-director, who was in Melbourne at the time. And it hit him probably within a week. He said, John, this is the story. He wrote the outline within 2 to 3 days. He had the first draft done within a week to 2 weeks. And I started casting in August of last year, and we were shooting by October of 2017.
Wow, that's quite a turnaround there. So as you're making this movie, I mean, obviously it's got to be really emotional and really powerful to touch on certain topics. What kind of fruit did you see from going through this process?
Well, as a filmmaker, this was probably the most personal in terms of how I was involved at every level, including the story. There was a lot of moments where I got sick to my stomach. Not in the process of making the film, but in the research and thinking about what we were doing and, you know, what you saw in the film and what your viewers may see in the movie. Of course, we're not doing this to gratuitous levels. We want people to use their imaginations. We show certain things, but not others. And in reality, what came out was a feeling of all of my talents, both as a functional producer in the, you know, mechanical level, but also from a feeling point that there was a real care. And this became a spiritual journey of sorts because in reality, it changed my life. It really changed my life. This film changed my life in a way that was both inside as well as the way I see the world and understand it on a different level. That there are people who are look like you and I, who do horrific things to children because it gives them power. Pedophilia is one thing, and that's horrible. But when you're talking about the ritualistic murder, chopping bodies apart of children, getting them to a point where their adrenaline is flowing so high and they're screaming and yelling, and that the people who are doing this to them are laughing like hyenas. This is how it's been described by some of the victims. Just unconscionable horror. And what I wanted to do out of this, out of that feeling, was to say, what can I do? Not just as a filmmaker, but what can I do as a person to change myself and my life? What can I do to help others? What can I do to make the world a better place and leave, at least to awaken people, do my part in my little tiny corner here in LA, to touch the lives of people who have sacrificed so much? And when I looked at people like Liz Croken, Tracy, and Melissa, and dozens of other people who literally have risked their reputations and their lives in many cases to break these stories about people doing this to children in child protective services, which Melissa has talked about many times and did a documentary Kids Inc. on, which I can't wait to see. And
yeah, support. Me neither.
But it's one of those things where you learn about this and there's no turning back. There's no, I'm just going to forget about what I just saw and what I just heard and what I just read. At the same time, I can only do so much, which is I can't just binge dive into this for 3 hours. And I mean, I have to do it in, portions. But it gave me the resolve as a human being to become that much better as a person, to know that every time I'm with a child, whether it be my own or not, or even in a few moments with a kid and just smiling at him or playing with him, that you don't know what the lasting power that can bring to them, to know that somebody cares, to know that somebody is safe, to know that somebody loves them. So it's been an emotional journey, but it's also been one of a higher calling, which is not necessarily religious, but is spiritual in the sense that there's a creator that created this beautiful and magnificent life on this planet, and that we have a responsibility to tend and care after it in whatever capacity that we can, in the smallest of ways daily and in the biggest of ways socially, that we can reconfigure our society in such a way that does not allow or foster this to occur, and also changes us inside to look at how we deal with children everywhere, where child abuse, the beating of children, the humiliation of children, not in mass because of society, but in the privacy of our homes where it's hidden from view. And it made me realize that we have an obligation to make sure that we do everything we can to help raise rational, creative, loving children who will grow up to become rational, loving, creating adults who will then meet someone else that they fall in love with deeply and create beautiful children in the process. That's the future. Because if we don't do that, if we just let Trump deal with it with his executive order, I'm not saying he's not, but if we only leave it up to one person or a group and feel that it's gone and out of our way once of all the bad actors have been arrested or tried and put away, in reality, we still have to deal with the human part of ourselves. And that's not our fault. It's what's been put upon us to divide and conquer and sow discord in the society. Because human beings, if you look at a baby when it's born, has no evil and hatred in it. You have to put that in the child. And if you look at it's just like a computer out of the box, pre-programmed, wanting your love and affection and attention. And I understand that there are many people out there that have been abused, who have trauma, and who have children, and they're dealing with the effects of that. But what we can try to do is to even mitigate their suffering as well. But we need to go up the stream and stop the people who keep throwing these kids into the water that are going to eventually head over the waterfall. We can't just keep catching them. We've got to put an end to the people who are doing this in our communities and the people that we elect, as well as the unelected who help run this whole thing that we're living in today.
Yeah, and that seems to be the big idea that more and more people are starting to catch on to. Is in the past, it felt like a lot of people were like, oh, we'll let someone else take care of it, or we'll vote someone in and we'll just forget about that way, because that's my part. But it's really starting to be more of a grassroots movement. People want to know what's going on in the world. Things just aren't adding up like you talked about. And then they start to get down that rabbit hole, and it happens to everyone. As soon as you catch that one twine, you're like, wait a second, this isn't right. And you keep pulling it and pulling it, and like 6 hours later, you're learning about JFK and to 9/11 and all the stuff in between.
Yeah.
But it's about grasping that creative power that God gave us in and funneling it into our gifts that we have. And you've done that with production, which we like is fantastic. And I love that. And more people need to understand that that's how we're going to change the world, is introducing the creative ability that we have to change the reality that we live in, to focus it on the good that comes from God. And so it's just, I gotta be more creative. And I love that about film. I'm into film a little bit myself as well, so I'm kind of on the same page with you there. But just being able to be creative is so important.
Yeah, and I also say this about, you know, the power of God and a creator. Whatever it is that your belief system is, religiously or otherwise, if you look at what is a calling in a person, right? Whether it be divinity or reaching out, that there's a power in each and every one of us, that unifying power. And I saw it, I'll just give one example. This ties a little bit into politics, but it's really not political. It's to understand the power of this. There's a moment that a lot of people remember from the 2016 primary with Bernie Sanders, and when that little bird flew up on his podium and the crowd went crazy. And obviously, you know, it's symbolic of many things, but what I think people saw in that too was the effortless joy that you see in people feeling good without any money or command. It's just explosion of this beautiful feeling. And you see it in college football games too, when you do the halftime or whenever they do their traditions and stuff. That's a religion, if you want to believe. That's a community of people coming together. They're rooting for their team. They're there to have a good time, have fun. It's not about eating the other, you know, the opponent. Oh, of course you have an enemy, but at the end of the day, everybody shakes hands, goes off the field. We played a fair game, and that duplicated all over this country is the true power that we have yet to tap into. If we were to able to do that in just a very short period of time, all of our power that we receive from the Creator or our religion, that our belief system, it unifies all of us through a method of love and compassion, which is to look at your neighbor and know you see the suffering in them that you also too have suffered from in the past. The emotions, the feelings, they're equal, even though the circumstances are very different in many cases. But that recognition is what makes us human beings and alive, and the only species on this planet that has that capacity to feel a love and give it, and it has a healing power. I have met so many Christians as a result in this film that have prayed over me, and that feeling has never left. It has changed my thought process. It has changed my emotional state. I myself am agnostic, but I came from a Catholic background. But I think it's a very beautiful thing when people are sending their love and care, whether it be through Christ or God or whatever, just to touch and heal somebody or give them goodwill. I think we're really needing that in this country desperately. And the more we do this, the more we continue to rise up and wake up and unite together and reach out even to our enemies and not what they're thinking or feeling before they've even had a chance to speak, but say, I just want to hear what you have to say. I want to know why you feel this way. And now I want to tell you why I feel this way. And here's what the real issues are going on. We can start working together on that are not political issues. These are human issues.
Yeah. And so living in, you know, the Hollywood area, specifically in Los Angeles, it definitely probably comes with some negativity that you're around. What experiences have you had with that?
Well, I've been out here for 18 years, and I have seen a lot of things in my time out here. Not that I've actually participated, but you go up Sunset, you go on Hollywood Boulevard, you'll definitely see a wreckage in human beings, desperation, seeking fame, seeking money, seeking power. There's a real lack of care in a lot of people here. There's a major homeless problem that is not being dealt with, and people just walk on by, don't say anything, don't look at them, ignore the problem. I mean, here in Westwood, where I live, is one of the wealthiest areas, next to Bel Air and Brentwood and Beverly Hills, and we have a major homeless problem here that's starting to creep in. And when we're talking about kind of the darkness, I mean, we talk about the Hollywood film industry, right? For which I'm in, but I started distancing myself about 10 years ago. And I really didn't understand the depth and the level of it. But if you could imagine being in a city where you're constantly feeling stressed, anxious, where people are fighting over petty things. I mean, on the streets, I mean, road rage and honking, and, you know, just when people blatantly doing things in front of you, looking at you after you kind of go, oh my God, what the hell did you just do? And they don't care. Now, that's not everybody. That's not what holds the city together. In fact, I would argue that there's a lot better people here than there are bad people. But the bad people, in my view, have a lot of power because of the entertainment industry and the amount of money that is in the city. This is an economy, you know, Los Angeles, the eighth largest economy in the world, arguably maybe fifth or sixth. But the point being is that it is this emptiness that when you actually start talking to people about real things, I've had people, you know, I don't go around just speaking to everybody, but once in a while I'll get to talking to somebody and it's dawned on me that nobody really talks openly and honestly about how they feel or ideas or something creative or something positive or something beautiful. It usually the conversations descend into what happened and who wronged who and how they're right. And there's a certain level of narcissism here that is, I can't be around it. I've tried, not because I wanted to, but just simply, I go back sometimes just to sort of remind myself of the wonderful bubble that I've kind of created for myself here. Wonderful thing that I have here in Westwood is the UCLA campus, which brings in all these wonderful students from around the country and the world. It's youth, it's new ideas, opportunities, it's hope, it's excitement for their futures. And they really haven't formed yet all of their opinions about the world and the life around them. But on the industry side, there is a really disgusting element within the industry. It's about power. It's about having power over people. Harvey Weinstein is not an anomaly. Harvey Weinstein is the model. He just happens to look the part, but in reality, it's a lot of really good-looking people that are really, in my view, ugly on the inside, and it's not a choice for them. It's a compulsion. I'm pretty well convinced at this point that their life trajectory that they've been on for several years has rewarded them at every step of the way. And what I mean by that is this. Yes, money, education, achievement, accomplishment, status, position. This is where people come And the ones that stay and survive in that industry, in that system that I'm not a part of, is about crushing your opponent, about not necessarily outsmarting through like wits and sort of like engaging in fair business. It's about who can F the other person over to get ahead. And it's a system that attracts those kinds of people and keeps those kinds of people. And so the more, you know, and then on the face of it, you have, you know, the Me Too and which is all about, you know, I mean, there are real grievances there. Don't get me wrong. But I'm talking about the people who pay lip service to that. When in essence, in about, you know, language of tolerance, when in fact they're really not, they view people, there's an arrogance and an elitism that they really do look down upon everyone else. I mean, they can do it politically. They can say Trump supporters or voters. They can look at Christians. They look at people who are, you know, not as privileged as they are in their economic standing, or I mean, all of these things that they profess they are about the caring and or the righteousness of the, you know, the minority and the oppressed. It wouldn't be happening, and, you know, homelessness would not be a problem in this town with the wealth that is here. For those same very people who profess liberal values to do something about it. I mean, in reality, I'm not asking everybody to go out and become a Mother Teresa and give up their wealth. But I'm talking about being able to do something about it, really actually caring about it, putting your life on the line for somebody else. There is a materialism here. I mean, all the things that you could say from a conservative point of view to Chris Hedges, who's a socialist, and he talks about this depravity, this moral depravity in our systems of power. It's not just Hollywood, but out here, there's just it's a tragedy. In reality, the escapism, people who are willing and wanting, in essence, whether they're aware of it or not, to leave all their family and friends behind to come here and, quote, make it. At what cost? You know, I've had women that I've met that are willing to sleep with anybody to get where they want. I mean, unabashed, blatant, and they're beautiful, and they're charming, and some of them are very educated. I've met people who have talked about murdering people and finding it interesting. There was a girl I met years ago who talked about how she fantasized going out to Las Vegas, hiring a hooker, kidnapping her, butchering her, and burying her body out in the desert.
My gosh.
And the whole idea behind it was that nobody would care about her because she's a stupid hooker. These are her words. And you look at this girl and you wouldn't see that. But when they start speaking and the way they talk, and it's sort of this, I don't really understand. I mean, I understand it from the outside. I don't understand it myself, but I think it's the entertainment of perversion. I think this is part of who they are when they grew up, and they were rewarded for it. And they found a community out here among a certain group. And again, this is not all of Hollywood. There are a lot of good people in this industry. They just don't have power. And so these individuals set the agenda. There's a pedophile network out here among the industry that is very real. And there is a Satanist cult out here that worships Lucifer, and that is very real too. And it's not just in film. It's in the music industry. You go into average. I mean, it's just... it's disheartening, but it does set a vibe. And when I get out of here, when I leave outside of the city, even just getting 50, 60 miles away, I don't know what it is. It may be placebo effect or whatever, but my whole being just like calms down. I just spent a week out in Big Bear and time stood still and it was peaceful and calm. And I was in nature and I was outside, you know, walking and doing hikes and just being in touch with hearing the breeze in the trees and reflecting. And I came back and even my coworkers noticed. They were like, wow, you just seem really peaceful. And it's not like the day after it went away. It stayed for like a week. But you start finding yourself getting angry and frustrated, and you're just kind of like have to you know, you have to kind of like distance yourself and maybe go get a massage or something to kind of like cope with it. But the only way that I know at this point is to get out of the city. So it's a vibe here. It's very real. And I don't think it's because of the amount of people. I think it's the kind of people that are here running this city in all areas of our systems of power here.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it definitely is tied into the satanic the satanic line they have going through there. The spiritual powers and forces that be are definitely at play at that. And as you were describing the type of people that were there who are trying to use Hollywood and LA as an escape mentality, thank you, escape mentality, and they are just trying to make it, and they're just trying to use this to pretend that they're actually trying to make a difference, and they're saying all these things so people will like them. You know, that's a great parallel for what the modern church has become in our culture. It's just some people use it to get away from their daily life. They use it for a community that they can be involved with. They don't actually want to make a difference, but they go and say, oh, I wish things were different, and I'm going to pray for you, and they don't actually ever do anything. So I think that is a very strong parallel for sure, which gets us back to your movie and the actually doing something about the issues that you see in the world is one shine light on it like you've done, and then actually going out there and making a difference as a grassroots movement, which is so important, and so I really appreciate you for doing that. For sure.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's what we have to look at is what we can do every day in our daily life, right? Mm-hmm. So when it's dealing with children. And I'm going to give you one example of a friend of mine who she and I have had many conversations over the last year about this very issue and all the stuff that I've learned and I share with her. She was in academia. She was going, I think, for a second master's or a PhD, and she dropped out. And she told me, said, you know, if I'm going to get so angry and upset about this very issue of child trafficking, of child abuse, of satanic ritual abuse, you know, I might as well spend my time that I could be angry doing something about it. So she went to go work for a social workers group. And the first day she met a 2-year-old girl who there was a murder in the house, and she observed that any time a man came around this little 2-year-old girl, she would move away instinctively. She picked that little girl up, that little girl felt safe in her arms, held on to her. She took her to the park. She took her out for a walk. She spent the day with her and found that she had this wonderful, kind of funny, sarcastic sense of humor, this wonderful little sense of humor. And then they watched a movie together and she fell asleep in her arms. And it was a moment of safety for her. And she continues to tell me, give me updates about this little girl and how she holds on to her so much because of the situation that was going on. And I realized that, you know, 2 years old, you don't really understand what's going on, but unconsciously this little girl can gravitate towards something that is safe and good for her. And this is now her life's work. And it's going to evolve into something more beautiful as time goes on. She's thinking about opening up her own center one day. That kind of care, those kind of people are the ones that we need to inspire all over this world. And how we do it is simply this. What you can do in your daily life, you have Congress people, you have your representatives that you voted for that are in your district. And rather than say, hey, what are you going to do about it? Write them a letter and say, what can I do with you about this issue? This is how you get involved. This is how you become active. Because now it's not about politics, it's not about voting, it's about really dealing with the human issues that are going on in our communities. Getting together in church, standing up against the Catholic Church, or anybody who supports a system that hides all of these issues, and start engaging your parishioners and your fellow congregations to talk about the seriousness of these issues. Show them the video of Annette Lucas talking about her being abducted at 6 years old and trafficked around among the elite. Show them the testimony of Christy Allen. Let them get educated first and bring them in through a movie like A Child's Voice, where they can feel something at the end, because ultimately what this is a message of love and compassion inside of the story about the love inside of all of us for the child in us and the child that is not our own, and the promise that we make to protect and defend that child going forward. So these are the things that we can do locally. Sheriffs, getting involved with the sheriff, talking to local law enforcement, seeing what we could do to educate ourselves about the signs of human trafficking, supporting businesses such as hotel chains, where a lot of this crap goes down. There's an organization called the AAHOA. It's the Asian American Hotel Owners Association. Represents 18,000 members in this country, which is about one out of every two hotels in the United States. You go on their website, one of their top five initiatives is ending human trafficking in all of their chains. What they're doing is they're providing training for their members, from the franchise owners down to the cleaning staff, to learn how to spot the signs of human trafficking going on, how to properly document and get law enforcement involved so that they can get that child out of, you know, or that young person out of harm and go after the people running those rings. These are the things that we need to start thinking about. It's difficult in terms of, it's going to emotionally challenge a lot of people, but it's the goodness that comes through and that care and that compassion that we have for ourselves and other children that is going to win this battle. And I believe that every little act of love that you give a child is like a deposit of gold in the bank. It will pay dividends later on in life. So never think that because this situation seems hopeless, that it feels overwhelming, that the astounding and powerful resilience of human beings, not only in their unification together, but the acts of love that they give to children and each other to alleviate the suffering and let them feel the peace and love coming from other human beings that do care. The more we do that everywhere, the better life becomes for all of us.
Yep, that's it. It's all about love and coming together to end the evil in our world. So it could definitely start by, you know, by important movies like this. So as we wrap up our time together, can you let people know where can they get the movie? And do you have anything else coming up in the future?
Yeah. So right now, proud to announce today, we just got on Amazon and Amazon Prime in both the United States and the UK. It's available right now. So you go to Amazon, you put A Child's Voice in, it'll come up under movies. If you go to Vimeo, their on-demand section is on their website. If you go to Vimeo on demand or vimeo.com/on-demand, there's A Child's Voice there. You can rent or buy it. And the one thing I will say to anybody is this: if you buy this movie and you download it, share it legally with as many people as you can. We need to wake up as many people as we can in this world to let them know that this is a real issue. This film was based on fact-based evidence, FBI court cases, Ted Gunderson, the Franklin scandal, Ronald Bernard, all the survivors that have come forward. And we made it in a supernatural genre so that people could get involved in the story between the boy and the girl that are struggling through this world. But then again, the emotional journey is part of that process for all of us to feel something good at the end, which is what you saw at the end of that film. And the last thing I'll say is, as far as what we're going to do next, we hope to do a sequel to this movie that goes deeper into the global network, expands the story much further. And we're also going to be working on a couple of other things. We got a TV series and some other features that we're going to do, all within the social issue genre.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your perspective on things, and I hope to have you back sometime.
Hey, man, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Absolutely. Well, that's our show today, guys. It was a little bit of a different show today, wasn't it? Really, the purpose is I want to, re-talk about how important it is to be creative. Go out there and actually do your work. Change it. Use the gifts that God's given you to change the world and actually do it. Don't just sit around and hope someone else is going to do it. I know sometimes it's fun to go to church and then go home and pretend that church never happened. Well, read scripture, get active, be the spiritual force and that in this world that you need to be, because God put you in this world to make a difference. And shining light on difficult topics like this can be challenging, it can be hard, people don't want to hear about it, but it's important that we take these things down so we can turn our culture and our country and our world back to God and get it focused on the love and the unity that we're going to find under Jesus Christ, because that is the goal. That is what we're searching for. That is what we're working for. We have lots of forces against us, but who cares who's against us if God is for us? And guys, that's all I'm going to say today. I'm not going to ask you to like, subscribe, or share, but you know I appreciate it if you do. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope that you have a great week.